perspective that you will not hear on commercial radio. Remember that a group of donors has agreed to match your contribution today, dollar for dollar. You can donate by going to kboo.fm/give, by clicking the red box Donate in the mobile app, by texting KBOO to 44321, or by mailing a check to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, 97214. I'm going to leave you today with Vanessa Kwai's Climate Change International Court of Justice theme song, featuring Stan Antis and Sheila Wills. From the moles to our listeners, have a safe and happy New Year's Day, and we wish you everything good in the coming year. Thanks for listening.
What does it take for you to see lives of being lost? With all the storms raging, corals dying, ocean levels rising, it's a threat to our human rights.
Mr. No, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM. You don't know.
Are you ready for another year of grassroots community radio? With your support, it's possible. Go to kboo.fm/give or mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Contribute to KBOO's $75,000 goal for our Catalog of Connections year-end campaign, going now until December 31st. You can double your donation by donating today and have your contribution match dollar for dollar up to $20,000.
Today we honor Oregon environment icon Bob Salinger, who died on October 30th. For over 30 years, Bob has been a regional fixture advocating and fighting to protect our rivers, wildlife, forests, and communities from environmental and social degradation and injustice. One of his many gifts was his ability to effectively weave together environmental concerns, progressive politics, and a feisty pragmatism that achieved results. Bob was a frequent guest here on Locus Focus, and we'll miss his voice, his energy, and his humor. We'll be honoring Bob's memory over the next few months by rebroadcasting his most recent appearances on Locus Focus. Today's program originally aired on September 9th, 2004. Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place in the planet. Before we start, I want to remind you that today is the next-to-last day of our year-end campaign, Catalog of Connections. KBOO is commercial-free, volunteer-powered radio, made possible by people like you. Not only that, KBOO has trained thousands of people how to make radio, all for free, thanks to the support we receive from our members. So please show your support for this amazing community resource and help us reach our $75,000 goal by making a contribution today, or better yet, become a monthly sustaining member. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or please support the community station you're listening to right now. On July 20th, a dark plume of smoke rose from the center of Ross Island, blowing into the adjoining neighborhoods. Neighbors stood along the bluff above the river, watching the smoke drift toward them and wondering what was on fire. It turned out to be a number of old tires and abandoned equipment left in the center of the island by Ross Island Sand and Gravel's now-defunct gravel mining operations. This fire has ignited renewed urgency to wrest control of the island from Ross Island Sand and Gravel so that the long-deferred cleanup and restoration process can begin. Today we talk with Bob Salinger, Executive Director of Willamette Riverkeeper, about the pressure Riverkeeper and other environmental groups are putting on the city to reclaim Ross Island as an important natural area in the heart of Portland. Bob, welcome back to Locus Focus.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that night. I remember when I actually got a call from a friend who lives in Brooklyn, and she said, there's some smoke pouring out of your neighborhood. You know what's going on? So I ran outside, and all my neighbors are on the bluff looking, and there was this incredible plume of black smoke. I want to hear your story, because yours was even more dramatic about you looking at that smoke and trying to figure out what was going on.
Yeah, so I did go down there that evening, and there was still a lot of smoke in the air. It was very acrid. But they had a fire on the island, and it burned for several hours. It took more than a couple of dozen firemen several hours to put it out, and black smoke was pouring out across southeast Portland and downtown Portland. Unfortunately, although Ross Island Sand and Gravel stopped mining on the island and processing on the island a long time ago, there still is a lot of equipment there. There are old buildings, there's old machinery, there's piles of tires, all kinds of industrial debris that remains on that island. And some of it, the tires in particular, caught fire and burned for several hours. And a huge number of Portlanders were exposed to that smoke. The really disturbing thing is, because the department, fire department in Portland did not contact DEQ, they did not get air monitors out there. And so no one really knows what went into the air column. No one really knows what people in Portland were breathing for several hours. We have asked DEQ to do an investigation and look at what burned, so we have a better idea what people were exposed to, and also to look at what's still out there so we know what the risks are going forward. There's a lot of old industrial debris on that island, and who knows what really burned. There's also a lot of contamination on that island from the historical mining activities and processing that's been given a no further action. It's covered up and protected, but these fires can release a lot of things into the environment. So we did ask DEQ to conduct an investigation and explore what ignited and also what potential risks are still out there. And we have not heard back from them yet on that.
Well, I would say anecdotally, from breathing that smoke, it was awful. And I remember my neighbors and I were trying to figure out, well, what's burning? And of course, we were afraid that the forest was burning on Ross Island. But we also looked at how black the smoke was. And when I found out later that it was tires, it made a lot of sense. But it had a certain kind of putridness, which was very different from a forest fire. As much as it's not much fun to be breathing forest fire smoke, there's something about this which really made me think about what it's like to live close to all kinds of nasty industrial facilities across the country that you breathe this all the time. We're very privileged in some way to only have to breathe this when Ross Island occasionally catches fire. But it really raised a lot of concerns. And again, for a lot of us, it was like, what? There's a bunch of old tires in Ross Island. It sounds like it's actually in the center of the island, a toxic waste dump.
It is an old industrial site, you know, and people don't really think of that when they think of Ross Island. But in fact, Ross Island was an industrial site. And it's really important to note that we have lots of industrial sites in Portland interspersed with neighborhoods very closely. They back up to each other and they're interspersed, whether you're along the river, increasingly in East Portland, as there's more and more industrial activity along the Columbia Slough, along Johnson Creek. And these industrial facilities back right up to neighborhoods. So it's really important to know what's around you and to understand what kind of protocols are in place if there is a fire, if there's other kinds of disasters. It was disappointing to me to find out that because the fire department didn't contact DEQ, no air monitors were put in place. What we do know is that these neighborhoods were enveloped in very, very thick, viscous, acrid black smoke for hours and hours. I went down there in the evening after it got dark. I live in northeast Portland, and I drove down there when I had some time to just check it out and walk down through Oak's Bottom, and it just burned your eyes and your nose. It was still smoldering, and not the kind of stuff you want to be breathing.
It just kind of on a personal note, it was the night that there was an outdoor concert in Selwood. There's a Selwood summer concert series, and I talked to the guy who runs the series, and he actually gave the band the opportunity not to play, and they did play, and there was hardly any audience, and it just drove home again these ways that life can be really upended when we least expect it. Because I think here in Portland, we don't think of ourselves as living in a what they call now an environmental justice community, even though there's lots of sections of Portland, as you described, that are. And I was thinking, as I was watching that black smoke that night, of a time a couple of years ago, I was driving to Cebu, and there was a black plume of smoke. I thought Cebu was on fire, actually. It turned out it was a bunch of tires in the Cully neighborhood. And that's, again, another example of basically a toxic waste site that was not being controlled. So I wanted to get a sense of how do we proceed in knowing that there are these dangers. And then I want to speak after that more specifically about Ross Island itself.
Sure. Well, you know, the fact is that Ross Island stopped mining on the island in 2004. They ceased their mining operations, so they ceased excavating the lagoon to get sand and gravel, and they ceased using that plant in 2004. So it's been 20 years since they stopped using it, but it's still out there. And so, you know, one of the problems with these kinds of sites is they're really not under any obligation to deal with that industrial debris. They can sit on that for a long time.
Why is that?
Oh, they own the property. It's theirs, and, you know, they've just left it out there, but they are accountable for it. And, you know, so that's why I think it is important that DEQ really does follow through on investigating, looks at what might have gone into the air column, and also looks at what still is out there and potentially volatile or a hazard to the environment. You know, when you think about these old industrial facilities that have been around for, you know, decades and decades and decades, you can think about all sorts of things from PCBs to asbestos to, you know, you name it. They can be mixed in with those buildings and those structures. So what is still out there? What we heard through the agencies was that Ross Island Sand and Gravel Company was not even aware that there was a tire pile out there.
How did that tire pile get there?
Well, it was, you know, theirs. Again, it's a big industrial facility, but what's there, you know, apparently there wasn't a good inventory. And I think they're still investigating how the fire started. What we've also heard from the agencies is that somebody was trespassing on the property. Somebody came in there. And there is a problem on Ross Island and around Ross Island with a lot of derelict boats, a lot of boat camping, permanent boats there, and a lot of illegal camping on the island itself. So people make their way across from Ross Island across the Holgate Channel. And so there's just a lot of activity on that island that no one really pays much attention to. Unfortunately, Ross Island Sand and Gravel lets it go unchecked. And in fact, one of the things that is interesting is that both the state and the city are interested in doing more in terms of dealing with all the derelict vessels, all the illegal camping. But Ross Island Sand and Gravel has not been cooperative. And amazingly enough, Ross Island Sand and Gravel actually owns some of the water around the island. No one really knows the full story, but the state ceded it to them many, many decades ago. So it's a very rare instance where there's private ownership of an actual public waterway, which should be a public waterway.
Well, I'm thinking about this way of which Ross Island is kind of out of mind, out of sight, and comparing it to another toxic site in Selwood, which is where the Selwood Library now is. But that was an old battery recycling place. And the battery recycling place shut down. It was actually many, many years ago it shut down. And I don't remember who was responsible for the property, but they did major testing to make sure that there was not anything seriously dangerous in the ground below that plant, and determined that it was safe, and then they built the library there. But to me, the difference between having this wonderful library, a corner piece of our neighborhood, where there used to be a toxic site, and then who knows what's happening in Ross Island, is an indication of maybe the problems with the state authorities and city authorities, for that matter, not having enough influence or desiring to take control of determining how to clean up these messes.
That's exactly right. You know, we have about 900 acres of brownfields in Portland. Brownfields are contaminated sites, and they're not necessarily big industrial sites. They might be a gas station, a former mechanic shop, a battery shop. They're on our street corners and in our neighborhoods, and then we have bigger industrial sites that are brownfields as well. And a lot of times, again, owners will just sit on those, and that's why, you know, you look down the street. I live in Northeast, and there's sites all over the place that are just sitting empty with fences around them, and they're contaminated sites right in among our neighborhoods. And the state does not have a lot of power to force people to go and necessarily clean those up and put them into productive use if they're not necessarily directly a threat to people. And also, oftentimes, the owners aren't incentivized to do it because they're simply there's not enough profit to cover the cost of cleaning them. So they'll just sit on them for a very long period. There's been a lot of work done in the metro region to try and find ways to stimulate cleanup of brownfields, because we want those sites into productive use. We want those contaminants out of the environment. We need the space for housing and other uses. And there's been various programs in the legislature to try and move legislation through to better deal with those sites, but it's a very, very slow process. And there do need to be more tools to compel property owners to deal with their messes.
Well, I just wonder what those tools can be. And, well, it seems like in the case when a site is declared a Superfund site, which is a federal designation, then something sort of will sometime be done about it. But when it's this private property that isn't so serious to be a Superfund site, then there's lots and lots of leeway.
There is, yeah, there really is. I mean, the federal designation for a Superfund site under CERCLA does trigger a process and does trigger enforcement powers. And the state has enforcement powers as well. But they're limited, again, on these sites if they're not posing an immediate threat to people or the environment. People can sit on them for a long time. And that is the case out on Ross Island. The fact is that they ceased operations a long, long time ago. And the island has really sat in a state of neglect for a long time. And so I think the fire really was a wake-up call. It was a way to recognize that it's time for something different to happen out there. I don't really think of Ross Island as out of sight, out of mind. I think it is this amazing natural area, really in the center of our city, this iconic place, this amazing place for eagles and great blue herons and other wildlife, where you can paddle around and see beaver and otter and even the occasional sea lion. My son and I were out there one time and there were sea lions in the lagoon. This amazing recreational opportunity right in the middle of the city as well, for people that want to paddle and enjoy nature. And the sad part is it has sat neglected for a very, very long time. There are all kinds of issues associated with that neglect at this point. And so Willamette Riverkeeper, Urban Green Space Institute, both have called on Dr. Pamplin, owner of Ross Island Sand and Gravel Company, and the company to clean up the messes, literal and legal, and then transfer that island to an entity that can really take care of it in perpetuity and optimize all the opportunity that is out there. It's time to move forward on a new solution for Ross Island.
And you're listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM, KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI on Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Bob Salinger, Executive Director of Willamette Riverkeeper, about reclaiming and restoring Ross Island. And I want to remind you that today is the next to last day of our year-end campaign, Catalog of Connections. Help us reach our goal of $75,000 before December 31st. Your donation will be matched dollar for dollar by a group of generous donors. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or mail a check to KBOO-FM, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thanks for supporting Community Powered Radio. Well, I wanted to talk a little bit more, mention the legal mess, because that seems to be a lot of the problems with why Ross Island is being so neglected. So what is this legal mess around Dr. Pamplin and Ross Island Sand and Gravel and the City of Portland?
Yeah, well, there's a couple legal messes now. And first, we should orient people, too, as well. I mean, people think of Ross Island, but there's actually four islands. There's Ross, East, Hardtack, and Toe.
Actually, in Selwood, in Smile, people refer to it as the Ross Island Archipelago.
Yes, the Ross Island Archipelago. Mike Houck always refers to it as the Ross Island Archipelago, and Mike's been working on this for decades and decades over at Urban Green Spaces Institute and prior to that at Audubon. Bird Alliance now. And so it is four islands, and Dr. Pamplin still owns about 250 plus acres out there. 45 acres were transferred to the city on Ross Island itself in 2007. That was a deal that Willamette Riverkeeper, Bird Alliance, and Urban Green Spaces Institute, basically Mike Houck, Travis Williams, and myself, worked out with Dr. Pamplin to get him to transfer those acres to the city. But the vast majority, including a lot of the water, the lagoon, is still owned by Ross Island Sand and Gravel. And that includes the plant that's still out there. It includes a lot of habitat, and again, it includes some of the water areas. And what has happened is a couple of things. The first is Dr. Pamplin and Ross Island Sand and Gravel, under a reclamation requirement, are required to actually do restoration in the lagoon. And that has been in place for many decades, that obligation. What they did was they mined the lagoon down to about 120 feet of depth. And the sand and gravel that came out of that lagoon was used basically to build the Portland skyline. So as the lagoon got deeper, the Portland skyline rose. But when you do that kind of mining, you actually have to go back in and restore. And so originally, Dr. Pamplin and Ross Island Sand and Gravel were under an obligation to bring the entire lagoon up to T-minus 20 feet. So they're going to have to put in about 100 feet of fill and then actually restore around the edges as well for some shallow water habitat. That was changed in the 1990s to require him to do less. But here we are in 2024, and they still are nowhere near completing their work. Under a more recent amended agreement, they have a very specific timeline and a requirement to put up a security bond to ensure that that habitat restoration from the damage they did occurs. And it's supposed to occur by 2033. So they have about 9 years to finish it. Again, this has dragged on for decades already. Division of State Lands, DSL, recently fined Ross Island Sand and Gravel $2.9 million because they are so far behind on their obligation, and also because they did not put up a bond as they were required to assure if they don't complete their obligations that the state has some ability to go in and do it themselves. So right now they're facing a $2.9 million fine for failing to do their environmental obligations.
Years ago, I remember when I would be bicycling past the Portland Opera building, and there was this huge kind of Rube Goldberg conveyance, and basically they were putting in the big pipe. And so they were taking out all this stuff from the Willamette River and putting it on this conveyance, and then it went into trucks, and then the trucks went over to Ross Island, and they were filling the lagoon.
Barges.
Right. And
we haven't built a road there yet.
That's right, not yet.
And we never will, although some people keep suggesting it. It's a bad idea.
Yeah, so it was interesting, and I watched them for a few years. You'd see these barges in the lagoon, and they were putting all that stuff that had come from the big pipe into the lagoon, but it seems like that was a minuscule amount of what they needed to do.
Yeah, so their reclamation obligations were lessened, but they still have to create shallow water habitat around the edges, and that's really important for salmon and other wildlife. And so what they've been doing is bringing barge loads of clean fill in. At one point, the Port of Portland put some contaminated fill in, and that was a big scandal. But for the most part, clean fill, and they're slowly refilling around the edges in order to create this shallow water habitat for salmon and other wildlife. And again, they're decades behind schedule at this point, and they have a hard deadline now of 2033, but they're so far off track that they're being fined. But yeah, what they were doing was bringing that muck from the big pipe over in these barges. And by the way, we should talk about those properties as well. They have some properties on the shoreline too that are also derelict.
These are the properties that are right off McLaughlin.
Yeah, well, there's one right beyond OMSI, right on the riverbank. So there's another one under the Fremont Bridge. And so their first big legal issue is the fact that they're being fined by DSL, by the state of Oregon. The second one, which is even bigger, is that Ross Island Sand and Gravel transferred ownership of Ross Island and other properties to their pension fund. They have about 4,000 former employees that are enrolled in their own pension fund. It's Ross Island Sand and Gravel's pension fund. And they transferred these assets to the pension fund in exchange for millions and millions of dollars. So a lot of cash went to Ross Island Sand and Gravel. And these retirees, these pensioners that used to work for the company, got Ross Island, and they got some other properties that are also fairly derelict. Think about that. If you're a pensioner, you probably want money in your pension fund.
Not a toxic waste site.
You don't. Yeah. Not actually a toxic waste site, but a contaminated site, derelict sites. What happened was essentially they transferred distressed assets to their retirees. And they are now under a federal investigation, according to Willamette Week, for having done this. The pension fund now has a new set of trustees, apparently, so it looks like there's some action happening. But that's a very, very big deal because, you can't transfer distressed assets and take cash out of your pension fund. There's obviously real ethical and legal issues with doing something like that. And the company had control both of the assets and the pension fund. And so it's basically the same people making decisions for both sides of the equation. And so there's a big investigation going on there as well. And so those are the two legal issues, but there's also a lot of other issues on that island. The habitat has been neglected on the portions that Ross Island Sand and Gravel still owns. There's an incredible opportunity there to restore and bring that habitat up to its full potential. There are the harmful algae blooms that we hear all about most summers now that can form in a variety of places, but Ross Island's lagoon is a primary place where they form. And that water in there heats up, and it's kind of an incubator for algae, and then it flows out in through the opening into the Holgate Channel and then down the river. And that algae is toxic to wildlife, to dogs. People can't swim in it. And so it basically shuts down our river for a period of time, most summers now.
Actually, there's an algae bloom, I understand, in Oaks Bottom. There's been signs up for the last few weeks about it. And not a place that I would want my dog to swim in anyway, but it's concerning. And one of your sister-brother organizations, I think, came up with a really good plan for how to alleviate that algae bloom. You want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, let me finish up on a few more things, though, in terms of the challenges, and then let's go to that. So we have the harmful algae blooms. We have the remains of their facility that is still out there and, you know, presenting hazards, the fire, for example. We have all of the camping that's going on around the island and on the island. People have literally hauled porta potties and put them on dilapidated docks that are floating out in the middle of the Holgate Channel. We have some really inappropriate recreational activity as well. We still have people crashing through there at high speeds. The Holgate Channel and Lagoon are a really popular place for paddlers. We have wake boats still going through there occasionally, creating these huge unnatural wakes that are a threat to people in the environment. And you may have heard recently there was a case where the two dragon boats, not around Ross Island, but further toward downtown Portland, were capsized by wake boats. So there's just a lot of activity in this place that should be protected and enhanced, and this real treasure, this real jewel in the middle of downtown Portland, and instead it's sat neglected. So going back to the harmful algae blooms, the HABs, the Human Access Project has been leading an effort to deal with that. And the proposal is decades and decades and decades ago, the Army Corps of Engineers connected Ross and East Tact Island with a berm. And they're thinking that if you remove a portion of that berm and let the river water flow through, it could flush out that water and at least reduce the threat, cool the water down, create some mixing, and so on. So it's a very, very intriguing idea. OSU has been leading the research. There's still some really important questions to be answered. One is how well we will work. What is the modeling showing? And remember, there are harmful algae blooms forming elsewhere around Portland too now. So this is just one site, but it is by far the worst. But it's important to understand, and there's still work being done to really understand how effective that strategy will be. That seems to be the one that's most favored now. There were several strategies looked at. There are also issues with how that will intersect with the habitat restoration that Dr. Pamplin is required to do out there. As I mentioned, he has to restore the lagoon. And that's something that can be resolved. Those things are not mutually exclusive, breaching the berm and restoring the habitat. But there needs to be some planning to make sure that they're positioned correctly so that one doesn't wipe out the other. Then there's also the cells that I mentioned that the Port of Portland put in, the contaminated cells. There is contamination buried in that lagoon, and that also is over by the berm. And so it's important to make sure that if there is going to be some sort of removal, that scouring doesn't reopen those cells and repollute the river too. So there are some really important questions to be asked. The way Willamette Riverkeeper views this is that this is part of the problem, but we need a holistic solution. And our hope, and what we're calling on Ross Island Sand and Gravel and Dr. Pamplin to do, is to resolve his legal issues, expedite your reclamation work in the lagoon, put up the bond, the security bond that you're required to put up under law for the state. So if you don't complete the work, the state can resolve those issues with your pension fund, and then transfer that island to somebody that really can take care of it. You know, and I know from having met Dr. Pamplin back in 2007 when we were negotiating the last deal, that he cares deeply about his legacy. He cares about his reputation, and he cares about the island. It would be very sad if his legacy was this neglected, abused island right in the middle of our city. He has an opportunity to set things right, fix these problems, and leave an incredible legacy that will be visible forever.
And you're listening to Luckus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KPFG LPFM, KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Bob Salinger, Executive Director of Willamette Riverkeeper, about reclaiming and restoring Ross Island. And now, on the next to last day of our year-end campaign, Catalog of Connections, help us reach a $75,000 goal before December 31st. Your contribution goes towards independent, cutting-edge, unique programming by the people for the people. Help us meet our $75,000 goal by going to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or you can mail a check to KBOO-FM, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thanks for supporting Community Powered Radio. Well, how do you get Dr. Pamplin to sit down with you and to actually agree to these terms?
I go on Locus Focus and I call on him to do so. And I know he is out there listening.
I'm sure he's one of our listeners.
Absolutely. Everybody in Portland is a listener to Locus Focus, or should be.
Actually, I was just thinking about how when the So Would Be, which I'm not sure it's still owned by Pamplin, but I know he owned or did own all the neighborhood newspapers and the Portland Tribune. And the Portland Tribune has done lots of really good digging political coverage and environmental coverage for years. I don't think they ever covered Ross Island. And the article that was in the So Would Be about Ross Island didn't even mention, I think it might have mentioned there were tire fires. It was a tire fire. But they didn't go into any of the other concerns about what's going on with Ross Island. And it's interesting how Pamplin has given himself pretty softball coverage in his own papers about Ross Island.
Yeah, and I think part of our goal is to turn up the heat. And Dr. Pamplin has been sensitive to media in the past. In fact, what got him to transfer the 45 acres to the city, because those negotiations with the city had blown up and he had withdrawn, and it was articles in the Oregonian that actually got his attention. Writer Steve Dean compared him to a pirate and said the only thing missing was the parrot, and he didn't like that. That was when he agreed to meet with Mike and Travis and I and work through it. I think, again, he is somebody who is concerned about his legacy. His name is on a lot of things. He has a history of philanthropy. And I think this is a important gesture for him to make. So our hope is that he'll see it that way. And I think the important thing is that there are a lot of folks willing to work with him to make that happen. Now, he needs to solve his own legal messes. Those are his messes, and he needs to deal with those.
By the way, does that have any – think that can create another kind of pressure point for him to respond to the environmental messes he's made as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think it all has to come together, honestly. I think solving one piece of this puzzle doesn't solve the problem, whether it's the harmful algae blooms or it's the – machinery that's still on the island and the facilities that are still there, or the unfinished reclamation in the lagoon. For all these things to work well and to their full potential, I think it really needs an owner who can bring all those pieces together and facilitate them and make them work synchronistically. And so we look to our public agencies first for that. We look to the city of Portland, which already owns part of the island. We've also been talking with Metro. The other thing, and you may recall this from previous conversations, is Willamette Riverkeeper said that we would be willing to accept ownership of it as well. We actually own several islands on the Willamette. That's part of our portfolio that we have been restoring and making accessible for limited camping, remote camping, as part of the Willamette River Water Trail. If public agencies are not ready to take on Ross Island, we would be. Of course, we need to understand better the risks and liabilities of that, but we're certainly interested in stepping into that role if public agencies are not. Our goal, and we have a long, long history out there, is to really see that protected and restored. And we think that if public agencies aren't up to that task, that we could do it. So, but it all begins and ends really with Dr. Pamplin and Ross Island Sand and Gravel. But the message I would send to him is there's a lot of people out there that are interested in working with him to make this a reality. And that would be just such an amazing legacy to leave to the community. This island that basically created the downtown Portland skyline that made Dr. Pamplin and Ross Island Sand and Gravel very wealthy. You know, what a great ending to end it by restoring it, protecting it, and giving it back to the community.
Now, this friend of mine, Dave Storrs, is a musician who's down in Corvallis now, and he put out an album a number of years ago, and it was called Ross Island. He was actually the first person to tell me the sordid history of Ross Island, and he said, you know, it's a hollow island, that they hollowed it out to excavate gravel. And he has a very strong connection, being a Portland native, to Ross Island. And I thought about that ever since, and I go over the Ross Island Bridge quite frequently, and I look down at Ross Island, and actually it's a big part of my life since I moved to Selwood. And I look at it as this kind of tortured soul, that it's this incredible place, but its heart has been hollowed out, and that it's just so trampled upon. And I wonder how we get people to start embracing Ross Island and understanding that it could be this incredible gem, and it's right there, right across the river, or across half of the river from downtown Portland.
Yeah, you know, I'd say even in its current state, it still is a gem. I mean, when you go out there and you see nesting bald eagles and nesting great blue herons and all the species of birds moving through, and you know, so much amazing wildlife, and you know, when you're paddling around it and you're in the Holgate Channel, if the motorboats are not in there, I mean, it's like being in another world between Ross Island and Oaks Bottom. So it really is this incredible place, even in its current state. But I think to really reach its full potential and to deal with the various challenges, whether it is the harmful algae blooms, whether it's the illegal camping and the habitat destruction that goes with that, whether it's the derelict boats, whether it's actually moving forward on a big project like breaching the berm between Ross and Hardtack Islands, and dealing with all the conflicts that are there, as I mentioned, with the contaminated cells, with the restoration, it needs somebody in the center who can manage all of that and coordinate it, build a constituency around the island, get work parties out there to do restoration, really kind of activate it in an appropriate way, because it is a natural area, to deal with all of those issues. So somebody in the center to pull it all together is essential. And right now, not only is the island hollowed out, but the work around Ross Island is also hollowed out, because there's no center to that, with Ross Island Sand and Gravel basically hiding in the shadows.
Well, I think of another example, though it was an industrial land, it was kind of abused farmland, but what's now the Sandy River Delta, which when I first went out there a number of years ago, and it was just becoming a off-leash dog park, and it was like, I don't want to be here. This looks like really trashed out land. And now it's really become a gem, and I go out there a lot. And I think about how it's been restored. Now, it's actually part of National Forest, I guess, actually. But it has their own friends who does a lot of the maintenance. And it's just a gem, and it's so close to Portland as well. And it's sort of the beginning of the gorge. Instead of the beginning of the gorge being this trashed out farmland full of dikes and other things that were really messing up the river. Do you see that as possibly a model for what could happen with Ross Island?
I do. I mean, I think it's a great example. And the reality is most of our urban natural areas were trashed out places, right? Oaks Bottom was too. I mean, Oaks Bottom was a dump. So, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that...
Oaks Bottom is still a dump, but the dump has kind of restored itself, well, actually.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's on an urban landscape, a lot of times when we think of natural areas, there are places that we've taken back that had potential, but were in a state of neglect. And the Sandy River Delta is a great example of a place like that, where you've had incredible transformation and incredible investment. You know, the channel that now segregates Sundial Island, you know, all the restoration activities, just so much work has gone into it. And I think Ross Island can be that same kind of place. It can really attract stewardship activities. It can attract the kind of investment it will take to deal with some of the challenges. That can be activated with people out there doing restoration work. So there's eyes on the island and activity that is consistent with a natural area. There's incredible educational opportunities. There's tourism opportunities. I mean, it just... It's a remarkable place, and that it's still there and still the potential is still there is remarkable too. And then you think about that in conjunction with the work across the way at Oaks Bottom. You really have kind of this natural area complex there.
I'm thinking about a couple urban islands that are probably models of what we wouldn't want to have happen. One is Granville Island in Vancouver, and the other one is Prince's Island in Calgary. Granville Island is in the Mackenzie River, but I was only there once and was like, how do I get off here? It's just, I mean, it's basically totally paved over. Right. And the same with Princess Island in Calgary, which is in a smaller river. And I wonder how to keep that from happening too, that if Ross Island were made accessible, of course, both of those islands you can walk to or you can drive to.
Yeah, I mean, Ross Island is protected by a couple of things. One is that it is... not accessible from the land side. There's no bridge, and there never should be. And two, it's in the floodplain for the most part, a lot of it. And three, you know, it is protected in large part by environmental zoning as well. And so, you know, there are these calls that occur occasionally to do something wacky out there. I think it's a place that can... we can apply some creativity, but I think it has to be within the context of this natural area, that it's not going to be a place that we want to pave, make accessible from the land side. I think it's a place you can really enjoy from the water, too. I don't think you need to really step onto the island to enjoy it. I think to some degree, because we have the eagles and the heron colony and other things there, it's a place that to some degree should be left to the wild in the city as well.
I was talking to somebody a few weeks ago, shortly after the fire, about Ross Island and, you know, the need to preserve it. And this person said to me, they could build an amusement park there. Yeah. I said, there's one already here in Oaks Park. But so I think there's a mindset.
Just extend that roller coaster across the island, do a loop and come back.
Exactly. I think that there's still mindsets about, there's a lot of education for people to appreciate that to make or to keep an island like Ross Island magical, you don't have to have a magic mountain kind of amusement park.
You know, I think there's always going to be those kinds of ideas. There's always going to be somebody throwing out something wacky in the name of innovation and creativity. But I think this is a city that really cares about its natural areas, cares about having nature in the city, cares about its wildlife, cares about its salmon. It doesn't get any more spectacular, really, than Ross Island. So I don't actually worry a lot about those kinds of ideas. You know, I think there's a huge community here that sees the true value in that island and would fight to preserve it. I think the bigger challenge for these kinds of places in the long run is loving them to death through, you know, more passive activities. You know, how do you deal first, you know, with the motorboat activity and some of the partying that's really going on in there? You know, and then even for more passive recreation, how do you channel that and program it so that it doesn't get overrun? Because it's actually a very, very small place and it can get trashed really quickly. And if people are putting a shore under the eagle nest or under the heron rookery, you know, they won't be there. So, but again, you know, I think those kinds of things are starting to happen because of neglect. And what we've always found is when you get a party in who takes ownership literally or figuratively of these places, activates them appropriately, gives the public a channel for ideas and activity that is appropriate, that they really do rise up and get restored, and that people will be protective.
Yeah, I think that, again, that the Sandy River Delta is another good example of that. I mean, there is a small amount of homeless encampments there, though I haven't actually ever seen them, but I've been told where they are. But overall, it feels is a very safe place. In fact, my dog ran off one time, and I had no idea where she was, and this woman calls me because my dog has a tag with my number on it, and the woman brought her back to me. And that's the kind of community that's there. And I think about, you know, it not just protecting people and their dogs, but also connecting that to protecting the landscape as well.
Yeah, you know, and these things are never perfect. I mean, there's all, you know, in these sites that are in very, very active areas, there is a certain amount of impact that is going to occur. And that's okay. I mean, this is part of our landscape. You know, these areas are part of the human landscape, and we're part of the natural landscape. And so they're not necessarily something to be walled off and separated. But I think if they're programmed and activated right, you can get a tremendous amount of human recreational opportunity and activity in a place like this that actually is a positive benefit for the island and the environment. It's a matter of creating those opportunities. You know, and as far as the houselessness that's going on in places like that, I think there is increasingly a recognition that natural areas, although it may not be a little counterintuitive, are not the right place for houselessness. That these are sites that do not have amenities, that are actually very fragile, that are easily destroyed, and they take decades to come back. And unfortunately, we've seen that in a lot of natural areas. I think natural areas during the peak of the houselessness crisis were kind of written off, out of the way, out of mind. And what I think people have discovered now, when you think about a place like Big Four Corners, for example, this beautiful wetland complex, huge amount of restoration activity went into restoring that area. Was completely taken over to the point where they pulled over 150 stolen vehicles out of the wetlands there. Think about that, 150 vehicles were in the wetlands. The devastation there will take decades to undo. Other places, Beggar's Tick, just a variety of locations that have just been damaged. I think as the city and other municipalities grapple with the houselessness crisis, I think there is a recognition that we're very pleased to see that natural areas, parks, have to be part of that equation. And they're places that present particular challenges and particular priorities. So I think as we move towards solutions, hopefully humane solutions, we're going to see more focus on these kinds of areas. And I was in a conversation with the City of Portland recently about exactly that.
And you're listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. Seattle stations KBSG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Bob Salinger, Executive Director of Willamette Riverkeeper, about reclaiming and restoring Ross Island. I want to take a moment to consider the important role that KBOO plays in our community. We provide thoughtful, challenging, and profound information and music and culture you just won't hear anywhere else on the airwaves. Somehow KBOO's kept this up for over 56 years, and you can help us to continue to be the cheerful voice of social responsibility by contributing right now during the next to last day of KBOO's year-end campaign, Catalog of Connections, where we're giving the gift of grassroots community media. Help us reach our $75,000 goal by going to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321, or you can mail a check to KBOO FM, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. For the last bit of the show, I want to talk about a little more about the city. And I understand that you had a meeting with City Commissioner Carmen Rubio right after the fire, and that she had some interest in some of your ideas. I want to talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, Commissioner Rubio was very interested in this. And actually, when we made that initial call for Ross Island to come into public ownership and for an investigation into the fire, she was the first politician to come out and support that and voiced her support and has continued to be interested in this issue. And so that's very much appreciated, because I think it's going to take pressure from multiple angles to move this forward. What we're hearing right now is that Dr. Pamplin, Ross Island, Sand and Gravel are kind of hunkered down as they work through their investigations. But we need agencies, public officials, others, and we'll be calling on our membership to do this as well, To put pressure on this, the media, opportunities like today, I wasn't being facetious earlier. I think creating that energy around this, that this is a priority, this is important, this needs to happen, it needs to happen soon, and we can get this done. It's been lagging now for 30 years, so it's time. And I put it into a bigger context too right now, because I think what's really exciting, there's this old tired concept of river renaissance. You may remember that, like around 2000, the city did this thing called river renaissance. And for those that remember it, their eyes are probably rolling out of their heads right now. But it was kind of this vision for the river, for the urban river, that it would rise up and be restored economically, for recreation, for our economy, for our enjoyment, and really for its ecological values. And there's been progress made, but certainly nothing that kind of met the aspirations that were articulated back then. I do think we're on the verge of river renaissance too. I think we have incredible opportunities in the next 4 years to really achieve things that have been decades in the making. When you look at some of the issues that are on the table in the next couple of years, not only are we talking about Ross Island, but we're talking about Willamette Cove coming online, McCormick and Baxter, a huge contaminated site that's now has some proposals to move it forward into more public type uses. West Haden Island, probably the biggest battlefield on the environment in the city of Portland over the last four decades. Port is working with us, Metro and others, to move that into public ownership. So there's these sites that are coming into public ownership. The Superfund process is about to move into its cleanup phase. Finally, after a quarter of a century, we're actually going to have contaminated sediment coming out of the river in the next few years. It'll take a long time to get it done, but it's finally starting. You see these new opportunities like the OMSI District and the new Native American Center that's going in. The work up at the Falls, also Native American-driven. Work there. Kellogg Dam coming out. I mean, so many different things that are really, really big deals in and of themselves happening right now. And when you take them collectively, I think we're finally on the verge of actually achieving that River Renaissance vision.
Well, when you told me, first of all, that you were going to contact Carmen Rubio and then that you actually had a meeting with her, it gave me a sense of hope, because she's not exactly been pleasing a lot of environmentalists and climate activists for a long time, particularly because of her stance on Zenith. However, I found that this is a very interesting opening on the possibility of figuring out how to talk with her and getting her charged up. And then I got an email from her a few days ago about how it was about basically the housing proposal that the city passed. But she says in the email that the environment and housing do not have to be at odds with each other. We can do both. And it was very nice to see that in an email from one of our city commissioners.
Well, and Commissioner Rubio walked her talk on that issue, actually, because when the proposal came to council pitting housing against the environment, she was one of the strong no votes on that and had to stand up to Commissioner Gonzalez, who was basically pitting the environment against
everything else.
Against housing, and doing it in a way that was really blatant and really at the behest of the Portland Business Alliance. And it was a big battle. It was absolutely unnecessary. In fact, the Planning Commission had rejected those arguments already, but he brought them back and pitted, for example, green roofs against affordable housing, even though green roofs are not what's causing our affordable housing issues. That was very unfortunate, but Carmen Rubio was one of the folks that stood up to that and pushed back successfully and derailed his efforts. You know, from my perspective, Commissioner Rubio has been very, very engaged on these kinds of issues and has been working hard to really learn the opportunities and challenges on the river. And I think that's what we need from all of our electeds. You know, and I've been very heartened, actually, from a lot of the conversations I've had with a lot of candidates. I think there is a renewed interest in the river that's probably as good as I've seen in the 30 plus years I've been doing this work. People really have come to recognize that this river is something incredibly special. You know, it's not this murky, polluted thing. It's that too, but it's actually this incredible thing that it defines our city, that it is the
biggest real opportunity we have in this city. When you think about what we could do along its edges, the opportunity to get out on and in the water, when you think about the ecology, the entire Willamette River system, every fish that uses the entire 187-mile-long Willamette has to pass through downtown Portland. You know, I think we're at this precipice of really doing some really big things. And I could keep going. Albina Vision is another that's happening right now. So suddenly all these things are in front of us. And so we need politicians that are really engaged, active, are able to make hard decisions, because there'll be pushback on some of the more environmental pieces. But I'm seeing a lot of politicians, a lot of people running for office, really coming out and learning about it. So that's very exciting.
Yeah, that experience talking to three of the candidates running for District 4 on our running on air show last Thursday. And it was just nice. I mean, these are probably the three most progressive candidates that are running, but it was just nice having this be the general tone. I'm having these images as you're talking about kind of my life on the river, and they range from walking through the woods in Oaks Bottom and connecting actually in the Holgate Channel, which is there's this wonderful place you can go, and it's very quiet unless somebody comes through with their speedboat and blasting rock and roll. But generally, it's a very peaceful place, and you're right in the city. And it ranges from that to the Waterfront Blues Festival. And I'm thinking about a magical way of you sitting in the Blues Festival, or sitting in the K Booth for that matter, where you have a great view of the river and watching the alpine glow as the sun sets across from Mount Hood, and thinking this is an amazing place to live and celebrating it with music. And I think that Portland is known for that, at the same time that we have this kind of gnarly environmental and racist past that we're kind of working our way through now. So what is your vision in the next couple minutes for where the river's going to go and how we're going to work with the city to get that to happen?
Well, first, you know, while we're on the topic of politicians, what we need are politicians that lead on this. And that's, you know, people have asked me, you know, who the best environmental candidates are. And my answer is that the ones that actually have specific ideas and are willing to be the first vote. What we've had in recent years oftentimes is third and fourth votes, people who would go along with the environmental issues, but they weren't going to lead them. And with this new council coming in, we need people who are willing to seize the initiative, move legislation, and lead that effort and pull in other votes. So that's what I've been looking for, is people that I think can truly lead on these issues. I think that there are some regulatory issues in front of us, floodplain protection, Superfund cleanup. We need council members that are actively engaged in that. And then there are the opportunity sites like West Hayden Island, McCormick and Baxter, Ross Island, and so on. So folks that can lead there and use the bully pulpit to move those kinds of issues forward. My vision is one that we have a river that is moving toward cleanup aggressively, that has places all along the urban area that are restored and accessible for people, that a fish can move through downtown Portland and find habitat and places to help it survive on its way to and from the sea, and that we address these historic harms that we've done to people as well as we do all these different things.
Well, Bob, it's great to talk to you again, and I look forward to seeing you do all this work, and we'll help you along on the way. So thanks for being on Locus Focus.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking with Bob Salinger, Executive Director of Willamette Riverkeeper, and you've been listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Sales Stations KBFG up here from KODX up PFM, KMUN and KCBU in Astoria, Oregon, KCI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to our podcast on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. To hear previous episodes of this show and any of our public affairs programming, go to kboo.fm or listen in iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give special thanks to the KBOO staff and volunteers, who continue to do an incredible job of making KBOO the important community resource that it is. And you can help us by becoming a member of KBOO or renewing your membership if you're already a member now during our year-end campaign, Catalog of Connections. We're independent, community-supported, grass-fed, volunteer-powered radio. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321, or please support the community station you're listening to right now. And thanks for supporting community-powered radio. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Next week, we'll look back at the past year and ahead to the future with Eric DePlace with Salus Strategies. My engineer is Ray Bodwell. We'll go out with Fire in the Mountain by the Neville Brothers. Thanks for listening. Have a great new year and stay safe.
Tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
We know a KBOO.